and you are listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, where I can't imagine why the Hudson Opera House hasn't fully canceled the Winter Walk and forgotten about it and said, we don't want to be a super spreader event. They've canceled the fireworks, but they are still holding many events. And I urge you, for one, to stay home, and stay home not just for Winter Walk, but stay home for just about anything you can. As you're about to hear the local news tell you once again how many COVID-19 cases there are locally and how many deaths there are locally, and they're all pretty much record numbers. So please stay at home and wear a mask and wash your hands and wait for the vaccine like everybody else. If you go into stores wearing shoes and shirts, you can wear a mask too. Now you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. We're going to hear all sorts of local news. We'll hear some Christmas music from the U.S. Girls and Quintron and Miss Pussycat this morning. We'll also hear some local news, the national headlines from the Public News Service, and the better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate, and more on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Lithuanian composer Martin Rock engineers the collision of ambient noise and cinematic forces in his music, and we'll venture into deep space with him on the next Deep Threes. Plus, music from Christina Pato, VJ Iyer, William Onyebor, and Nina Cherry. Deep Threes. Where will the music take you?
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXE sustaining supporters who provide critical monthly support. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Tunstall Studio Publishing of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Congressperson Antonio Delgado voted December 4th to, quote, remove marijuana from the list of scheduled substances under the Controlled Substances Act and eliminate criminal penalties for an individual who manufactures, distributes, or possesses marijuana, unquote. Hudson Valley Representatives Sean Maloney and Paul Tonko, both Democrats, also voted for the decriminalization bill, while Republican Elise Stefanik voted against. The bill passed 228-164, but was largely for show, as the U.S. Senate will not take it up. But the U.S. Senate makeup could change after the special elections in Georgia in early January, and Democrats have already begun touting decriminalization only being possible if the two Democrats win the Georgia elections for the U.S. Senate. Sarah Trafton is reporting for Columbia Green Media that a new comprehensive plan for Catskill Park is calling for a transportation study of high-use corridors such as Route 23A, as well as public transportation options and potential parking fees at high-use sites. The Greater Catskill Region Comprehensive Recreation plan was completed by the Catskill Watershed Corporation, Catskill Center, the State Department of Environmental Conservation, and New York City's Department of Environmental Protection. As use of Catskill Park continues to increase each year, environmental agencies are looking to increase recreational access. The Catskill Center Stewardship Program, including public outreach and education at Catterskill Falls, Platte Cove, and Peekamoose, experienced a 27% increase in visitors during the summer season. Some trail goals specific to Greene County include creating a new Huckleberry Loop Trail from Huckleberry Point to the Platte Clove Road Trailhead, connecting the public fishing parking area in Hunter to the Becker Hollow parking lot and trailhead, and extending Devil's Path to Route 42 and connecting Tannersville to the Catterskill High Peak Trail. The plan also recommends piloting a kayak kiosk rental system at Lake Rip Van Winkle in Tannersville and branded bicycling routes in the Catskills. The plan will serve the Catskill Park well in the coming years, said Catskill Watershed Corporation Assistant Executive Director Jason Merwin. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. William J. Kemble is reporting for the Daily Freeman that the town of Ulster will increase enforcement of anti-dumping laws as the practice of unloading garbage along secluded roads in the area is increasing. The town intends to buy equipment that can read license plates. Ulster Supervisor James Quigley said during a video conference December 3rd town board meeting, quote, "We'll have a discussion at the next meeting authorizing the purchase of device or two of this nature so that we can start monitoring these locations and aggregating data that might give us a lead as to who is doing these actions," unquote, Quigley said. The equipment is estimated to cost roughly $6,000 and would need to be compatible with the town's existing computer system. One of the problem areas is Main Street in the hamlet of East Kingston, which becomes First Avenue in the city of Kingston on the other side of the municipal border. Many of the discarded items seem to be from house cleaning projects, town officials said. The laws that forbid dumping in the town of Ulster include a first offense penalty of up to 15 days in jail and a fine of up to $750. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. And New York Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation Friday, December 4th, announced the State Board for Historic Preservation recommended the addition of 16 properties to the State and National Registers of Historic Places. Among the sites recommended, the village of Coxsackie Cemetery in Greene County. It was established in 1826 and reflects residents who helped shape the early history and development of the village, including the graves of veterans of the American Revolution, the War of 1812, and the Civil War. And the Albany Woolen Mills in Rensselaer County was also proposed for the list. The brick industrial building was constructed in 1906 and 1907, reflecting the role the textile industry played in the development of the Rensselaer City riverfront. Shirts, underwear, sweaters, jackets, and blankets were made in the factory for decades before it closed in 1967. Other sites named to the list, the A.M.E. Zion Church and Mount Zion Cemetery in Ulster County, home to the oldest African-American congregation in the city of Kingston, and Wethersfield, a 1,000-acre country estate in Dutchess County built between 1937 and 1977 by Chauncey Stillman. A listing on the Historic Register can help owners in revitalization projects, making them eligible for various public preservation programs and services. Property owners, municipalities, and organizations from communities statewide sponsored the nominations. Once the recommendations are approved by the commissioner, the properties are listed on the New York State Register of Historic Places and then nominated to the National Register of Historic Places, where they are reviewed and, once approved, enter on the National Register. Read the full press release at parks.ny.us and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org. After a wet Saturday, the National Weather Service in Albany predicts a dry week and a cold week. Sunday starts mostly sunny with a high of just 33 and a low around 20. Monday is also mostly sunny forecast with a high of 33 and a low around 19. Tuesday should also be mostly sunny with a high of 34 and a low around 21. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
Moments before he's hit with a 40-foot wall of sulfuric acid that will horribly burn everything in its path. Now, that's real acid, so I want to see goggles, people.
My eyes, the goggles do nothing. It's almost always safety first at the Thingularity Radio Program, so don't let that happen to you. Have your questions answered by sending them to CatskillMakersInfo@gmail.com and tune in every first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM Acra or anytime at WGXC.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Justin of Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Grabbable, handleable, listener-fueled radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Columbia Greene Community College, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Mashuda. I'm 18 years old, and I'm also from Hudson.
My name is Fatih. I'm 7 years old, and I'm also from Hudson.
My name is Luna. I am 10 years old, and I'm also from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate. Bookish things.
Bookish things.
Yes.
True.
I'm sorry. I stole your line.
It's okay. I was talking with my mic off.
It happens sometimes. The struggle.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk about some books today, and we're going to get started with Mashuda, who is mute.
Yeah, I'm just looking for my poem, like, that I loved. Okay, my book, not my book, I'm sorry, my poem, Why Me? Why me? If you have to ask, why me? When you're feeling really blue, when the world has turned against you, and you don't know what to do. When it pours colossal raindrops and the road's winding mess, and you're feeling more confused than you ever could express. When the setting sun won't shine, when the stars will not align, when you'd rather be inside your bed, the covers pulled above your head. When life is something that you dread, and you have to ask, why me? Then, when the world seems right and true, when rain has left a gentle dew, when you feel happy being you, please ask yourself, why me then too? And then it's by Barbara Vance.
Is that one that you just happened upon or that you sought out? Or was that something you read for school?
No. I have Pinterest, and I came across this poem, and it's like, it just spoke to me because right now, with like the COVID and everything, and like basically we're all in isolation, so it just spoke to me. It's like, why me? It's like, it's also just, it's why me, and it's also why us, that we have to go through like all difficulties life threw at us. So
yeah.
This year has been like crazy. It's like, I can't wait until like January 1st 2021. Like, this year has been like, it's just like one obstacle another. Just first, like, the fear of COVID.
Yeah, it's been a challenging year, I guess, for you and Amelia, especially with your, you know, like having this big change in your life, going into, you know, graduating and then going into college.
Yeah,
it's a lot in one year. That's a nice poem.
Yeah, it is a very nice poem.
Thanks for sharing that.
I have like this, like, can you see it?
Mm-hmm.
The book that I made. First, it was like all plain. Then I made it into a color. Then I'm almost done. And this book, it's going to take some months for me to finish it. I like finish it each day, and these are like the hearts that I have.
It's beautiful. Fatia is like an expert at making a book out of any assortment of paper that she finds. So she has art and she has notebooks and she makes the books.
Like funny one.
You made some funny ones. What's happening in the picture? Can you describe it for the people that can't see it?
There's a giant, a mean giant, like he wants to capture the princess. There's a bunch of people saving her and wrapping the giant up.
You're wrapping him up?
And this is butterflies and bees attacking the giant.
Whoa, everybody's ganging up on the giant.
And like one man, they're like, everyone's like a man. Like one like man, like saved the princess from being harmed. Her father sent a lot of people to save her.
So where do you find your inspiration for all of your drawings, Fatia?
I just think about it.
You just think about it? You just come up with all these ideas in your brain?
Yeah, and I have this one for you. Like, this one is an angry fish. This one's a good fish. That's the rainbow fish, and that's the bad fish. I use my colors to create it. And these are like, this is a stronger fish, and that's the weak fish.
What do you do to make sure that it's clear that the fish is angry?
Like, not like both of them is angry. One of them was like angry and the other one was super nice to like everyone.
Do you know why the fish was angry?
Because he hated her.
Oh, she was upset with the other fish.
Oh, and when he does something like the good one, it was actually a queen, but like, well, like, this one wasn't a king, like king.
Mm. So it wanted some more power in life.
Yeah. And he has sharp teeth, but she doesn't. She's kind. And do you know why this verse is here? Because they're going to fight.
Uh-oh. This is a very dramatic picture. It's full of emotion and suspense. What will happen? That's great. I look forward to seeing more pictures from you in future weeks. It's always nice to see your art. And I know our radio listeners can't see it, but they can imagine it because you describe it so well. Thank you so much for sharing your beautiful work. We look forward to seeing more.
Yay. I'm going to make it a new book that's in quiller.
Nice. Yeah, that'll be fun to see. Thanks for sharing. How about Lena? What did you want to talk about today?
This is kind of like a class assignment that we had to do, which was like writing. And so it was like a pen pal assignment. And we were writing to like farm animals. But I'm just going to read some of it and cut some of it short. Hi, okay. Dear goats. Hi, my name is Lena. I will tell you a little about myself. My favorite songs, which is only going to be one song since I'm shortening it, consists of Circus Hop. My favorite games are Doki Doki Literature Club. Again, I'm cutting it short. I heard about you guys and how you guys used to be neglected / abused. I'm sorry that had happened to you, but at least you are in a better home. What is it like now compared to before? Do you like the sanctuary? I've met many exotic animals, but none were goats. Well, I hope I hear from you again. Sincerely, Lena. And the original sentence for I am sorry what had happened to you, but at least you're in a better home used to be I am sorry what had happened to you, but at least you're in a better place. Like, they died. And and my my brother and sister started laughing at that, because they were helping me with my homework. And not going to lie, this was fun. So, yeah.
Writing to a goat?
Yeah, but...
You actually get sent it to a goat?
Yeah, it was fun writing to a goat, but before I started this, I was technically just writing random stuff, because Cece and Calvin were arguing while I was over here, like, help me, they're arguing, I'm being held hostage against my will, I don't want to be here anymore, they're still arguing.
You were writing that to the goats?
Yeah, I was writing help to the goats. Yeah.
boats to the rescue. But are you actually sending these letters somewhere?
Well, my teacher says we have to have our parents' consent if we actually want to have our if we actually want to have our letter sent to the goats. And we had to put our address at the top, but I obviously didn't read my address to you guys because I don't want anyone.
Yeah, radio listeners don't need to know where you live. That's really cool. I want to write a letter to some goats.
Yeah.
You think they'll write you back?
Goats can't. They said in the article that we read in class that they would have like a, someone in, like interpret what the goats want to write back. And they would like sometimes send you a letter, even a painting from the goat.
Ooh.
Yeah. Sometimes a painting from the goat or, well, the animal that you have in choice. I chose goats because why not? And originally I was going to write to the chickens and say that they tasted delicious and that I loved how they taste.
So mean.
But my sister suggested it.
If I was a chicken, I would peck up, scratch up your letter. Like, I'm not writing her back. She says I'm tasty.
My sister suggested it, and I actually thought it was funny, so I kind of wanted to write that to the chickens, but instead I chose goats.
People like eating goats, too, but...
Oh, my God. I remember also joking around about how saying they would also taste delicious, even though I haven't even eaten goats, because this whole entire time that we were writing it, which took, like, I'm pretty sure 2 hours to write it, because we were joking around a lot, and we didn't know what to write. And by we, I mean my siblings, because they're helping me. And not gonna lie, the process was just funny.
Well, if you end up sending your letter and you get a response, you'll have to share it with us.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. It also, wasn't a note, but I follow the Duke Lemur Center on Instagram. And they were doing a fundraiser at one point where you could, I don't remember if it was like you could buy art or if it was like a raffle or an auction or something, but they had artwork that was made by the lemurs where they would like feed the lemurs and it would make the lemurs like walk around on the canvas and there was paint on it. So there was like, just like little lemur tracks all over the canvas.
Emily, if you want, I can send you the information about the farm, because on the article, it has like stuff about the farm, like the address, I think, and the website, because they show, because if you write to a specific animal, like an example, I'm just going, and like they all have names. So like it would be like the animals, whatever the animal is, like an example, chicken, and then the name. And so if you want, you can write to like a chicken or a goat or something like that. So I'm going to send that to you because it sounds like you would really like to write to an animal.
I would.
Yeah. So I'm going to send that to you.
I think it'd be funny because I think I would write to the animal and unless I told them a lot of stuff about myself in terms of like where I work or like that gave away how old I was, they'd probably think I was a child because I don't know how many adults write to goats or other animals, but maybe I'll write to an animal.
Yeah.
Let them know how I feel.
Yeah.
And that I don't think they're tasty.
But like, this was, not going to lie, really fun to write. And I'm actually very excited for the next writing assignment because it was, not going to lie, really fun. But it was funny making it also.
Thanks. So Amelia, what animal did you write to this week?
I didn't write to any animal, but I did argue with my cat because she kept laying on my computer.
They do that sometimes.
That was my week.
Especially when the computer is nice and warm.
Yeah.
Did you have a book that you wanted to talk about?
She's just very big, and then I can't type.
Yeah.
Yeah, I reread The Great Gatsby, and now I finally started it on my paper, which is very exciting. I haven't had a lot of time to read because we're getting to the end of the semester, which means a lot of work. But I did read Billy Budd by Herman Melville, which was interesting and very, very difficult to read. Like, I had to pick up a dictionary or, like, look up words on my phone. Pick up a dictionary. When's the last time I've done that?
look up some words on my phone, like every two sentences. It was very vocab heavy, and I don't know if I really liked it at all. But that was fun.
I kind of like learning new words. I haven't had that much recently. I remember there was a time period where I kept coming across words that I had like never heard of that were used multiple times in a book to the extent that I was like, I should look up what this word means. But I haven't had that in a while. So what, can you give us any insights into Jay Gatsby since you've been psychoanalyzing him?
Well, we have to analyze him on like 5 personality traits, which is very interesting because on one hand, he's very agreeable. He's like depicted as a very charming, very like likable character. On an entirely other category, he can be the opposite end of the spectrum. He can be like neurotic and emotion driven because he's definitely an emotional character. I mean, every decision he makes surrounds one woman in the book. So it's very interesting and it's a lot of fun.
Well, good luck finishing up all your schoolwork, both you and Mashuda, the semester ending soon. I have a book to talk about. It is Class Act by Jerry Craft, which is a companion to his Newbery Medal winning book, The New Kid, or just New Kid, sorry, not The New Kid, New Kid. And so it's a, sort of a sequel, but it's called a companion novel. It takes place after New Kid, and it centers on Drew, who's an eighth grader who goes to school with Jordan, who's the main character of New Kid. And so Jordan features heavily in this book too, but this one focuses in on Drew. And both Jordan and Drew are scholarship students at a fancy school where there are two of the few people of color at the school. And a lot of their classmates just have a very different lifestyle than them, but they have like really great friends. They're in their second year now. So they have their crew of friends. They figured out sort of who their people are. And yeah, so this one focuses on Drew. So you get to know a little bit more about him. And a lot of it centered on their relationship with their friend Liam, who's white and he's from a very wealthy family. Like they have this huge house with like an indoor heated swimming pool and like multiple people working for them, like somebody that drives them around. And Drew coming from a much humbler situation where he lives with his grandmother and his grandmother has to work multiple jobs to like pay the bills and keep things going. He has like, even though Liam's a really good friend of his, he has some like trouble once he visits Liam's house for the first time. It just like hits him really hard, the difference between the way that they live. And so it's a lot for him to wrap his head around. But the book's really nice. It shows like how they deal with that as friends. And I think at least Lena read this. I can't remember if Amelia or Mashuda did, but we'd talked about it on the show before The New Kid, New Kid without the, but in New Kid, each chapter has like a nice little spread at the start of each chapter that was using a movie and kind of making like a funny twist on the movie title. And this one does a similar thing, but it primarily has different images that are like based on different graphic novels. Oh, I didn't mention this is a graphic novel. It's from graphic novel for middle graders. So this one has like chapter one is Sketch Diary of a Shrimpy Kid. There's one that reminded me of Lena. There's one for Ghosts, which is one of Lena's favorite graphic novels. There's Teal Friends, which is like Real Friends by Shannon Hale. I forget what the Ghosts one is. Somewhere in here. Omelette is for Amulet. So that was kind of fun. I love that part of New Kid and I loved it in here too. And I was good in that I didn't cheat and look ahead, which I really wanted to do. But then it was interesting because it was all like middle grade graphic novels for a while. And then all of a sudden at one point there was like an adult book, like a couple adult books that snuck in there. So I'm not sure how he decided to switch up a couple chapters. But yeah, it was really great. I loved New Kid, loved this. Look forward to seeing more. I'm curious because there's New Kid and then this is a companion. And I wonder if he's going to write more and if it's going to be like another companion where maybe it focuses on another student or if it'll be New Kid 2 or Class Act 2. Be interesting to see where it goes, but I'm pretty sure I'd be shocked if he didn't write more because there's so many interesting characters to explore. And even, you know, it was really fun learning more about Jordan and his family. And all of their other little friends that you get to meet along the way. But yeah, so Class Act by Jerry Craft, highly suggested. And definitely check out New Kid if you haven't yet and you're interested in reading middle grade graphic novels, which, as I've said many times on the show, is a really great sort of segment of books in our collection. We have great middle grade graphic novels. We're really blessed with good titles for that age group and in that format. So I'm curious if anyone is excited for anything coming up, any books coming out, any movies coming out, any things happening in life that you're excited about.
I'm excited for Christmas, if that counts for anything. I hope to get like a lot of gift cards.
I'm kidding.
A lot of books.
I hope you get that too. I know every year you have like a list of the books that you're looking forward to thinking about for the holidays.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited for Christmas too. There's like 23 days until Christmas. I'm your new Christmas calendar now. And I'm very excited because there are a few things that I really want. And yeah.
Cool. How about you, Fatia? Is there anything you're excited about that's coming up?
I'm so excited for something at Christmas. It's like about what's it called again? Like writing a Santa list.
Mm.
It's super fun.
So you like write a letter to Santa?
Yeah. And you know what I'm going to write? I'm just going to write like few things, five things. Like I'm going to write about like boxes, five different boxes. One that's rainbow and the others that's frozen. And one that's a candy one. One that's like a rainbow, lollipop, frozen, chocolate, and unicorns and lollipops and rainbows.
Wow. You're going to have rainbows. A pretty exciting stocking if you get all that. Rainbows and chocolate and stuff. Sounds nice. And lollipops.
Mm-hmm.
I am also excited for Christmas, although it feels like a long way away, even though I know it's going to come any minute. But I'm excited to hopefully, if things happening in the world don't prevent me from going there, I'm excited to see my parents. Although I'm sad that I won't get to see my sister this year. It'll be my first year without my sister for Christmas, but she can't get home. And I'm really excited about a new book for adults that came out this week by our dear friend, Sam J. Miller, who's a local author, grew up in Hudson. And I'm really excited to read it. I got the audiobook. I was first in line because I'm a true fan. And it's called The Blade Between. And I'll have to report back on It's a book for adults, but I'll report back on if I think it's a good read for teens. Mashuda and Amelia are now adults officially, even though you're also teens. So I'm sure it'll be fine for you all, but we mostly talk about youth books on the show. So I won't talk about it unless it seems youth appropriate, but I'm very excited to read that. I have to finish the book that I'm reading now, which I'm actually really enjoying as well, before I dive into that one, but very excited. Yay.
I'm excited for the vaccine and hopefully it works.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm also excited for Christmas because if the vaccine works, then we will have more gatherings and yeah.
Yeah. I can't say that I'm excited to take the vaccine because it doesn't sound like much fun, but
mm-hmm.
I am excited for the day when we can like gather with other people and feel safe and
yeah
kind of get back to normal a little bit. That'll be very nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I miss doing radio with you all in person. We record this on Zoom, so
yeah, it's
a little different. We miss the studio.
Me too.
And each other. Guess that's about all the time we have for today. I hope everyone has a great week with lots of quality reading time. We'll be back next week to talk about some more books. Until then, happy reading.
Yay.
Happy reading.
Bye.
Through the darkness, light the way. We can make it through the day. Keep the faith, don't let it stray. Live, love, laugh, sing and pray.
Live, love, laugh, sing.
Through the day, keep the faith, don't let it stray.
You have tuned into the River Newsroom's Hudson Valley Coronavirus Report from Lissa Harris of The River and Roger Hennigan-Gilson of The Other Hudson Valley. Go to theotherhudsonvalley.com or therivernewsroom.com for more information and links to the stories included here. This report is a collaboration with several Hudson Valley journalists, airing on WGXC 90.7 FM at midnight, 5, 7, and 9 a.m., and online in the audio archives at WGXC.org. La Voz, a Spanish-language news magazine covering the Hudson Valley, is translating these roundups and co-publishing them on its website in Spanish at lavoz.bard.edu.
For months, Governor Andrew Cuomo has been talking about positivity rates in New York. The percent of COVID-19 tests coming back positive has been at the heart of state pandemic policy and in the public spotlight as it dropped to reassuringly low levels or spiked to local outbreaks. But the focus is shifting. In a press briefing on December 4th, Cuomo said that the state would move to focus instead on hospital data in the state's 10 regions. Quote, the infection rate is not that relevant anymore, unquote, he said. Quote, we're really focusing on the hospitalization rate and hospitalization capacity, unquote. There's no avoiding it. A state shift in focus from cases to hospitalizations is a more defensive position, signaling that efforts to keep the pandemic under control are falling short. That's because hospitalizations lag behind case numbers. A predictable percentage of the cases reported today will be hospitalizations in a week or two, and deaths in 3 or 4 weeks. The goal of controlling case numbers is to keep them from surging high enough to threaten hospital capacity in the near future, a threshold New York may have already passed. As of December 3rd, which about 26% of hospital beds statewide were still available, with the least capacity still free in Long Island, 21%, and New York City, 22%. There was more capacity in ICUs, with 39% available statewide. Cuomo and state health officials have tasked hospitals recently with adding 50% capacity in case of surges and planning to transfer patients between networks of hospitals if hospitals get overloaded. In Erie County in western New York, where some of the highest positivity rates have been seen in recent weeks, Cuomo ordered elective surgeries to be canceled this week. If there's a silver lining in the state's grim preparations for hospital overload, it's this. The death rate among the hospitalized is down. In March and April, Cuomo said 23% of those hospitalized with COVID-19 died. In recent data, the figure is down to about 8%. The average length of a COVID-19 hospital stay has shortened also from 11 days to 5 days, and the percentage of patients intubated has shrunk from 85% to 45%. Although there is no surefire cure for COVID-19, doctors and medical researchers have learned a lot over the course of the pandemic about how to treat patients so they have a better shot at recovery. The range of effective treatments runs the gamut from cheap steroids to recently developed monoclonal antibodies to practices like proning, flipping patients onto their stomachs so they can breathe better. Nationwide, hospitals in many places have passed the breaking point. The Atlantic reports, quote, the pandemic nightmare scenario, the buckling of hospitals and healthcare systems nationwide has arrived. Several lines of evidence are now sending us the same message. Hospitals are becoming overwhelmed, causing them to restrict whom they admit and leading more Americans to needlessly die, unquote, right? Robinson Meyer and Alexis Madrigal, two Atlantic writers who are also co-founders of the COVID Tracking Project. With the state shifting its policy focus from case data to hospital data, what's happening in New York's microcluster strategy? We don't know. Cuomo has said in recent briefings that the strategy would be revised to factor in hospital data, but offered no details. No changes have been made this week to focus zones, and no new focus zones have been added despite surging cases in many areas across the state that have been under watch as potential zones. The state's microcluster strategy isn't working, says Bill Hammond, senior health policy fellow at the Empire Center. More worrying still, Cuomo bent his own rules in downgrading a Brooklyn cluster zone, Hammond writes, allowing the neighborhood to move to a less restrictive yellow designation before state case targets for downgrading were met. Quote, if the governor was trying to head off an adverse ruling by the Supreme Court, his strategy did not work. In a 5-4 ruling on Thanksgiving Eve, the justices struck down the cluster zone limits on religious gatherings as a violation of the First Amendment's protections of freedom of worship, unquote, Hammond writes. New York passed a milestone on December 3rd. The number of COVID-19 tests that have been done since the beginning of the pandemic is now greater than the number of people who live in New York State. New York State will join a federal program to vaccinate nursing home residents and staff, Cuomo said December 4th. The move will free up more of the state's allotment of vaccines for frontline health workers. About a third of the state's 700,000 healthcare workers are considered high risk, working in emergency rooms or other parts of the system where they are often in contact with COVID-19 patients, Cuomo said. New York State health officials expect to be able to vaccinate about a third of that third in the next 2 weeks. This week's Best Read on Vaccines Stat News has a deep dive on what the development of effective vaccines means for society and how we can make the most of them. They're not a silver bullet, writes Helen Branswell. Quote, if we're not careful, we could fail to take full advantage of the opportunity scientists and governments, pharmaceutical companies, and philanthropic foundations have created for us, unquote. One topic touched on in Stat's story and an issue of growing urgency, when will pregnant people be able to get a vaccine? It's not just a matter of priority and limited vaccine availability. The front-running vaccines haven't been tested on pregnant people in clinical trials, and there is debate among experts about whether they should be recommended during pregnancy. Vaccines might pose different risks to pregnant people or developing fetuses, but COVID-19 infections pose heightened risk to both. And then there's the matter of pregnant healthcare workers at risk. Stat reports that three-quarters of healthcare workers are women, and roughly 330,000 are either pregnant or breastfeeding. The CDC issued a new guidance this week on how to take community action to keep COVID at bay. Much of it reads like old news to those who have been following pandemic developments closely, and particularly the agency's recommendation that all Americans wear masks anytime they are indoors with non-household members or when a household member may be infected. Cuomo said December 4th that he will sign an executive order that changes the rent relief bill passed by the state legislature. Details are scarce at this point. The governor said only that the order will, quote, reopen the application window and extend the eligibility requirements to help more New Yorkers, unquote. That expanded eligibility should help with a core problem in the initial bill, which appropriated $100 million in rental assistance, but only allocated $40 million of that total due to the income eligibility parameters of the law and technological and linguistic barriers to applying for aid. Back in July, CURB did a deep dive into the problems with the program. New test locations will soon be rolled out statewide, Cuomo announced on December 3rd. New York is partnering with Prescriptive Health to expand testing capacity in areas where testing is limited, and Prescriptive will deploy rapid test kits provided by New York State in those locations. One question we have at the River, how will the expanding role of rapid tests affect key COVID-19 data, like the positivity rate the state has been using as a rough guide to outbreak severity? Rapid tests are much more likely to return false negative results than PCR tests. In October, the state of Kentucky stopped counting them toward its calculation of positivity rates in order to standardize state data. The federal CDC may have shortened quarantine requirements this week, but New York State has not followed suit, and county health departments are struggling to convey to frustrated local residents that they still must follow 14-day quarantine periods if exposed to COVID-19. Quote, the New York State Department of Health has not adopted that, unquote, said Orange County Executive Steve Newhouse in his December 4th video briefing. Quote, we live in the state of New York. Elections have consequences, unquote. The New York Times conducted an informal survey of 700 epidemiologists, a redux of a similar survey done in the spring. The paper found epidemiologists were a cautious bunch, acting more carefully in their personal lives than most Americans. They have also modified precautions as more is learned about COVID-19. Some reported they now worry less about, quote, socializing outdoors, touching surfaces, or sending young children to school, unquote, but are more worried about indoor air transmission and the dangers of not wearing masks. Only a small minority of the epidemiologists said normal life could restart in the summer. Most said that even with the vaccine, it would be a year or more for many activities to safely restart. The outbreak is getting worse in state prisons, too, reports Law.com. Some 20 state prisons currently have at least one active case among their inmate population. The Legal Aid Society is urging Governor Cuomo and the state prison department to release inmates who are vulnerable to the coronavirus. The resurgence of the virus in correctional facilities has made the question of when the incarcerated will get vaccinated even more urgent. We still don't know the answer. Inmates are not in the top tiers of federal vaccination criteria. The CDC has prioritized correction officers in the first phase of immunizations, and the Associated Press reports that the federal prison system will set aside its initial allotment for prison employees as well. We still don't have enough data on the vaccines to know if they will stop transmission. It's possible they may stop people from becoming ill, but still allow them to become infected without symptoms. And if so, vaccinated guards could still bring COVID-19 into prisons and transmit it. The U.S. unemployment numbers for November were released December 4th, showing hiring continued to slow from its rapid clip over the summer. The country added 245,000 jobs, far fewer than the 610,000 added in October, edging the unemployment rate down to down 2 percentage points to 6.7%. This is not necessarily bad news. The unemployment rate still fell, after all, and is dramatically lower than its peak of 14.9% in April. But other economic indicators show a worrying picture. The unemployment rate only counts people actively looking for jobs, missing out on most unemployed people, stay-at-home parents, people unable to work due to medical conditions, the incarcerated, most homeless people, and your friend Steve, who just lays on his parents' couch all day and takes bong hits. The unemployment population ratio captures these groups. It has now recovered more slowly than the unemployment rate and actually fell in November. Two possible explanations for people not seeking jobs: the fear of contracting COVID-19 and the need to stay home with children due to school closures. On December 4th, Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos extended the pause on student loan repayment through January 31st, an additional month of reprieve for borrowers. Interest rates will remain at zero during the freeze. Long-term symptoms in those who have recovered from active COVID-19 infection is a growing problem in the U.S. Leading public health officials recently convened for the federal government's first workshop on the issue, the New York Times reported December 4th. Quote, in an inadvertent but stark illustration of the difficulty of the recovery process, two of the four patients scheduled to speak at the meeting were unable to because they had recently been hospitalized, unquote, the Times reports. Bloomberg Law has a troubling report on COVID-19 survivors being denied new life insurance policies because they have previously tested positive for the virus. One former state insurance commissioner told the publication that he's, quote, not aware of any state regulations that stop insurance companies from underwriting against a disease like COVID-19, unquote. Now, the region-by-region roundup, starting with the lower Hudson Valley, where in Westchester County's the seven-day average positive test rate remained above 5%. County Executive George Latimer said in the December 4th coronavirus briefing. On December 3rd, 768 people tested positive in the county, 6.7% of total persons tested. As of December 2nd, 292 residents were hospitalized with the virus, up from 47 one month ago. But Latimer said that the county has, quote, not reached a point of crisis, unquote, in the availability of hospital beds, and expects there to be no changes to the county's microclusters, one orange zone in Port Chester and five yellow zones, including one in Peekskill, where the seven-day rolling average of those tested is 10.10%. On December 4th, the Putnam County Department of Health addressed a question that's growing more saliently by the day: when you should seek treatment at a hospital. County Health Commissioner Dr. Michael J. Nezawat advises that over-the-counter medicines and rest can subdue mild COVID-19 symptoms, though it's imperative to continue monitoring progress with a thermometer and a pulse oximeter, which measures a person's blood oxygen level and is available at most drugstores. Symptoms that demand immediate emergency attention include shortness of breath, persistent pain or pressure in the chest, bluish lips or face, the inability to wake or stay awake, and confusion. Quote, people coping with or recovering from COVID-19 should pay attention to their respiratory strength, unquote, Dr. Nusenwatt said. Quote, daily observation of personal breathing patterns such as rhythm, rate, and quality can help to determine when or if to seek medical care, unquote. Putnam also released an update to its coronavirus dashboard via Twitter on December 4th. Some of the numbers beggar belief. For example, the county says there are only 153 active cases, but Putnam reported 442 positive test results over the past week, which raises the question, how is the county's health department tracking active cases? By comparison, neighboring Westchester County is using all new cases in the past 2 weeks as a proxy for active infections. That leads to a current estimate of 6,746 active cases in Westchester County, some of whom are probably no longer infectious. But it's better to overestimate than underestimate, and it strains credulity that Putnam has just over 2% the number of active cases as the county bordering it to the south. Did Rockland County see a post-Thanksgiving COVID spike? Ask a headline in an article at lowhud.com that dives into the county's troubling numbers. In the week since Thanksgiving, active cases jumped 32% to 1,953, and 12 people have died. More troubling still is that if Rockland is seeing a surge of new cases as a result of Thanksgiving gatherings, we wouldn't even be seeing it yet. For the second day in a row, only a limited number of nurses at Montefiore New Rochelle Hospital were called into work. On Tuesday and Wednesday this past week, some 200 nurses went on strike amid a labor dispute with the hospital before seeking to return to work on Thursday. But in the 2 days since the strike, only a small number have been called in by hospital administration, despite what the nurses said was a typical patient workload. The union said that the move was retaliation for the strike. In the Mid-Hudson Valley, the coronavirus is continuing to spread rapidly in Ulster County, with 283 new cases reported in the last 3 days. Active cases set a new record December 4th with 1,212, double what it was 12 days ago. The previous peak of 1,009 was in the spring, though the positivity rate was likely higher then due to scarce testing. Quote, if we don't start to flatten the curve, this is going to be a very long and a very dark and a very difficult winter, unquote, County Executive Pat Ryan said during a December 3rd briefing. The county modeled how cases may rise in the following weeks and, quote, the best-case scenario still has us exceeding 5,000 cases by Christmas, unquote, according to Ryan, nearly 1,200 new cases in 22 days. Ryan also said that contact tracers in the county were being stretched thin, even with reinforcements from the state, and volunteers may once again be sought in the, quote, near future, unquote. He also warned of having unrealistic expectations for the first batch of vaccine doses, which will begin to be distributed in the state on December 15th. The state will receive enough vaccines for 170,000 people, and some simple math suggests only about 1,600 people in the county of 180,000 will receive vaccinations from the initial batch. Active cases in Ulster County are concentrated in New Paltz, which reported 165 on December 3rd. Town Supervisor Neil Bettitz told the Daily Freeman that the recent end-of-semester testing at SUNY New Paltz could not account for the surge of new cases and that he had not been informed of any super spreader events, saying that the virus was, quote, likely being spread by small gatherings, unquote. 10 deaths have been reported from COVID-19 in Orange County over the last 4 days as hospitalizations continue to slowly rise, reaching 102 on December 4th, compared to 33 at the beginning of November. Orange County Executive Steve Newhouse got sassy in his December 4th briefing with plans to hold a protest at the County Department of Health to rally against schools closing throughout the fall. Quote, if you want to get out of the house and need a reason to do it, I have a ton of other things we could protest together, but the school district and what they're going through, what the health departments are going through, what first responders are going through, what hospitals are going through, give me a break. Some of these things I read boggle my mind, unquote. 12 of the 14 school districts in the county closed at least one of their schools at some point between September 15th and November 15th, according to Newhouse. A business in Middleton was issued a warning for price gouging on disinfectants, Newhouse also reported at the briefing, but he did not name the malefactor. Fireworks planned for the kickoff of this year's alternate winter walk in Hudson have been canceled, according to the Columbia paper, after County Health Commissioner Jack Mabb said the event could be, quote, a significant COVID-19 spreader. The alternative winter walk, a lower-key version of the annual event, will spread out from Saturday until Christmas Eve. Columbia County released its town-by-town breakdown of cumulative cases on December 4th. There were no new cases reported in nursing homes since last week, and the highest number of new cases were in Greenport with 12. Two mobile testing clinics have been scheduled in rural Columbia County. The first will be held in New Lebanon's Shatford Park, adjacent to the town hall, from 10 a.m. to noon on December 8th. The second will be held the following Tuesday, December 15th, at the A.B. Shaw Fire Company in Claverack from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. A form of ID is needed as the clinics are only open to county residents. In the Catskills, Delaware County hit new records for both daily and active cases on December 4th, with 17 new cases for the day and a total of 87 known active cases in the county. Six county residents were hospitalized. Quote, multiple cases today and this week are linked to living room spread from Thanksgiving dinners and gatherings, unquote, officials said in an email to local reporters. Neighboring Delaware and Sullivan counties are both small rural counties, which residents often have to leave for medical care. Both counties publish a daily count of COVID-19 hospitalizations. It's tempting to compare the two to see how each are doing, but because the counties report data in different ways, those numbers mean very different things in each place. Sullivan County health officials say they are counting only people hospitalized in the county, which may mean the county's number is substantially lower than the number of hospitalizations coming from local outbreaks. Delaware health officials say their daily count is the number of county residents who are in the hospital with COVID-19, most likely in other counties with larger urban centers. It's a microcosm of the data problems we're seeing everywhere, as there is no standard method that different health departments are using to track the pandemic. Sullivan County officials issued possible exposure alerts for two Wurzburgo restaurants this week. La Menadas is one, and the Wurzburgo Diner and Cafe